This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome to the best of SDH AM from the Soccer Down Here Network. SDH Network available to you on YouTube and all of your social media platforms, as well as live events at soccerdownhere.mixlr.com and the Mixlr app. John Nelson here with you to take you through another week of SDH AM. You can find us 9:05 since we believe in Turner time, and until 11:05 and then later. And then what we do here is we come over and visit with you over here at the Off the Woodwork podcast section at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app, so you can catch up with some of the better parts and some of the better interviews and the more insightful segments that we have during the week. And we hope that you join us and become part of the SDH family after listening to us here. And however you receive your podcatchers, your podcasts, and all your information on a weekly basis. So without further ado, let's get you into some of the best that the week has to offer. First and foremost, let's start with Atlanta United and their matchup coming up on Saturday afternoon, one of the early matches here in this particular match week against the New England Revolution. The longtime play-by-play voice of the Revs, Brad Feldman, came by to visit to give us the lowdown on everything New England, expectations coming into 2025, and where things stand with them kind of grappling at the bottom of the East at present. And as I said, it's been entirely too long. See, if I can't remember the last time that someone has been on the show, it has been entirely too long. And so that's how we're phrasing things. It's been entirely too long since Brad Feldman has visited the show. And so... So now we bring Brad in. Welcome back to the morning show, my friend.
Hey, good to be on. How you doing?
Doing great. It's been entirely too long since we've had you. And what I wanted to do for our listeners and our viewers here in the Southeast is kind of go back and bring everyone forward from the beginning of the season to now so they can get their education on the Revs getting ready for Atlanta United. Expectations coming into the season, what was the level of optimism? What were the thoughts coming into the 2025 year?
The Revs did a near total rebuild in the offseason. Last year didn't go according to plan. Only 7 wins, finished out of the money in the playoff picture. And Caleb Porter's first year was a frustrating one for the team and the fan base. And so sporting director Kurt Anolfo and his staff helped Porter do a real turnover with 14 new players coming in. And so I believe an honest framing of the expectations would have been optimistic, but cautiously so, because you didn't know so many of these players, or if you did, you weren't sure how they were going to gel with one another and in Porter's system. And you know, if you look just at the standings right now, it would look like it hasn't worked, but I think that the noise so far hasn't, fans are right to be entitled to be impatient, but I would say that coming in, the expectations were what they still are, which is to make the playoffs. And it's early enough in the season still that that's not out of the question, but they need to get busy soon because they only have one win from six. So, I think, there's noise out there on the transom that's not very positive, but the mood within the camp is still very professional and forward-looking.
I was going to say, where are the pitchforks and the tiki torches right now wandering around Foxborough as opposed to the Patriots?
We're not quite there. We're not quite there yet, but it's, people want some wins.
Completely and totally understand it. Well, that's concerned with Caleb Porter and this offense. And that's the other thing that I wanted to bring up is that only a handful of goals this year. And Carlos Heel with his two-goal performance against Red Bulls is accounting for most of that. How much of a concern is the lack of offense in the results so far?
That's the main concern, quite honestly, is the lack of finishing. Now, full disclosure, they've only had their new striker, former Inter-Miami striker Leo Campana, for a couple of games. And so the plan has not really been executed, according to script. Without Campana, they have looked toothless up front. But like last week in the loss at Cincinnati, they hit the post twice. Could have been a different story. Even against Red Bull, where both goals came from set pieces, a free kick, world-class free kick from Carlos Heel and a penalty late, they could have scored twice. They got good service from the right wing, and Ignatius Ganago drove the ball right on the goalkeeper when he had the whole goal to look at. And, those are pretty big chances. They had north of two expected goals over the 90 minutes. So it's not as if they're not generating attacking chances. They just aren't converting. And that's the thing. And we know very well in our low scoring sport, you got to take your chances when you create them or they're presented. Otherwise, you can end up on the wrong end of score lines that look unfair. Quite honestly, they're bossing the match in the first half at Cincinnati. And then, there is a incorrect throw and call, which happens all the time. Rez relax for a second. They give up the goal. And then Cincinnati play pretty conservatively to protect a 1-0 lead at home. The Revs are organized. Their patterns of play are really good. The game model, as Caleb Porter likes to call it, seems to be generating attacking play. But Maxi Arruti, who's one of the great old heads in the league, was brought in to be a guy off the bench to spell Campana or Ganago in the late stage of the games. Having, he's an old 33, right? Like, it feels like he's been in the league forever. I think his first year is 2012 or something. But he doesn't look like a guy who wants to press for 90 minutes. He just doesn't have it in his legs. He's great for 10, 15 minutes at a time. And, I think also the Revs first couple of weeks were, working in their sort of fullback complement. First, Will Sands and more importantly, Peyton Miller were not 100% fit. With Miller back now, they get more attacking play down the left. And Luca Langone on the right, who's, really a winger, wasn't playing his game. They've gotten through to him what his game is. And now that he's able to run in behind, again, like the Revs are generating offense. They don't have an animal up front who's a lights out goal scorer. When Campana comes back, they're hoping they do.
I was going to ask, you're reading my notes. Where is Campana when it comes to being back and being a part of this offense?
I was on a conference call with Caleb Porter yesterday where I think he was quite genuinely unsure. I think that Campana is either going to be fit to make the match day squad tomorrow or a week from tomorrow. It's not certain yet. Like, he's training, but they want to be judicious in sort of unleashing him because they don't want this to be a recurring thing. He did a hamstring. And so I think more importantly, in the immediate future, Tomas Chankalai, DP winger, usually plays on the left side, another Argentinian for the Revs. He blew out his ACL last year, and it's been, you know, the normal progression back, but I think he's a step closer to returning. Both could be in the squad. Neither likely to be in the starting 11 based on the way they sort of dole out minutes, the guys coming back from these injuries. But obviously Chankalai returning from a longer term injury, and the performance people and the athletic trainers, they have a schedule they want to keep. And, you know, even if Chankalai has been training full, I think for almost two full weeks now, but they're not going to give him 90 minutes or even 60 minutes most likely. But he's a guy who, you know, can fire from anywhere. And even if he's not the one scoring, opens up space for other people because he's a constant goal threat in the attacking third. So, you know, I think you're going to see one or both available against Atlanta. And it's just a question of how many minutes and if both are in the squad.
All things being equal, how are you anticipating the starting 11 rolling out from what you've been able to glean from Caleb Porter?
Ooh, you know, it's hard to say. I think it's going to be very similar to what we saw against Cincinnati. You know, Matt Polster has been so good. You know, he wasn't even really projected to start. They acquired Jackson Ewell after 8 years in San Jose, and he's been fine. He actually made a bit of a difference coming on late, making some runs out of midfield, but he's more of a technical possession type player. In terms of battling in the midfield, Polster still has all of his energy and range and legs. And so I think that's the one real question. I'm assuming both center backs, Ceballos and Fofana, and two new players in the league who have been good. You know, the Revs have been very solid defensively. They've been in every game. They haven't given up more than two goals. And, you know, that's usually, you know, that was when they were, you know, that was Philly, and they you know, were pushing and stretched a little bit. So, you know, Carlos Heel's a dead on certainty to start. Another new player, Eli Feingold, a 20-year-old Israeli who can play on either, at either fullback position, likely would be the right back. Again, Peyton Miller, assuming he's still fit, like, watch out for that kid. He is a horse. He looks like a grown man. He's 17 years old. He's got national team and European potential. Like, he's still getting his sort of game IQ to where it needs to be, but he's got all the tools and can really impose himself on a game. And, you know, the wingers have been, I left out Alhassan Yusuf, who's been very good, Nigeria international ball winner, but not like a crunching tackler. He'll slide tackle more than most players nowadays, but he's not a dirty player. He just gets around the pitch, covers every, you know, blade of turf and really rangy. It's been Gonago and Langoni on the wings. That could change. I don't think Chankalai comes in. Luis Diaz has been a guy off the bench who's done well replacing Langoni, helped create one of the goals against New York Red Bulls. But I still think Langoni, he was very good against Red Bulls 2 weeks ago and pretty good against Cincinnati. You know, they want him like hugging the touchline, getting chalk on his boots, and then running in behind using his pace. And then, you know, heel behind Aruti is the most likely scenario, but you could see Ghana go up top with Carlos underneath, and they push somebody else wide, or Carlos heel starts at one of the wide positions and has a free roll. We've seen that in the past with Porter and the previous coaches. So, you know, but I think, you know, you're picking 11 from the 13 guys I mentioned. So, and then Alijos Ivicic has been the goalkeeper, you know, every game going back to last year. I don't see that changing. Alex Bono is the backup, but barring injury, that, you know, that's, and I don't think, you know, Ronnie Dyla is going to, you know, he's going to know that that's probably the group. Unless they throw a curveball and all of a sudden Campana's closer than we realize and he starts up top. I haven't heard any noise to that effect, but, you know, they keep it pretty close to the vest in these situations. So, that's what I would expect.
Brad Feldman, voice of the Revs, for the Revs Education here on a Friday in the hour of chaos, as we call it, or at least I'm calling it the hour of chaos just because. I'm going to have you play defensive coordinator here for a second. You've seen Carlos Heel. You know what he can do. You know the magic that he can create. if you were, say, in an American football parlance, defensive coordinator, and you were forced to try to make Carlos Hill be uncomfortable and do things that he doesn't like to do, and the Revs still have to try to create, how would you defend Carlos Hill? How have teams been successful in defending Carlos Hill in the past?
You're sure you're not sharing this with the coaching staff now, right?
Like, hey, Ronnie.
Listen, that's not a secret. He's one of the most fouled players since he's come into the league in 2019, Carlos Hill. People have tried to stop him a lot of different ways, but the two main tactics that we've seen is one, get somebody who's super mobile and, shadow him in a way that, they force – he's going to receive the ball. Yeah. The further from goal he receives it, and the less he's able to receive it in transition or when, the attacking team has numbers forward, so he has fewer defensive players between him and the goal, the less effective he can be. He can still, surgically dissect an opposing team that has two banks of four between him and the goal with a little through ball combination, a little dribble sucks in the, defender, a little dink chip over the top, or he, opens things up with an inch perfect, switch. But, what you don't want is for Carlos to get the ball turned, pick up his head and run at you, because he'll even at 33, he can slide by you on the dribble quicker than you think. You never know when he's going to release the ball. He's inch perfect with his key passes and all that. So, then the other thing is to, I hate to say it, can't kick lumps out of him. And teams will do that. But what has to then happen is that the referees set a tone early with a yellow card or, call the fouls. Carlos sometimes gets frustrated. He doesn't get off his game when you frustrate him. He just gets more motivated. So that, the psychological component, getting in his head doesn't work, but he's not the most physically imposing player, and we've seen other teams go right up against the edge of playing dirty, which I don't like. I mean, they should respect, he's an immaculate player and a great professional, a credit to the league, but he's very competitive. It's pro ball, and I think that that's one of the reasons also why Polster's out there is to police that a little bit. And so, I hope it doesn't disintegrate into something like that, where they're trying to kick him into the third row.
Yeah.
I know there's a good respect between Ronny Dyla and Caleb Porter. And we've seen in the past Dyla's teams have played it the right way against Carlos, trying, everything within the laws of the game to limit him. And I think that's what's going to happen. But Carlos is, he's worth the trip to the stadium. He's great.
Yep, he has caused issues for Atlanta United fans at Mercedes-Benz in the past. So
yeah, and he knows Brad Guzan too. They played together at Villa.
Yeah, so that is there with that as well. So then I ask you the defensive coordinator question to kind of go into this follow-up. So if Carlos Hill is not allowed to create, who are some of those next-level guys that may not necessarily get the Brad Feldman spot shadow in the show open that folks need to gravitate toward to be wary of if you're an Atlanta United fan going up against New England? If Carlos Hill isn't, then whom?
Well, I've already alluded to it. It's the wing play. Certainly Luca Langone, and I think Luca is going to love it on the Mercedes-Benz Stadium field because there's a lot of room out there. Like I was saying on another show, people, NYCFC get very defensive if you say that the Yankee Stadium field is more than 2 inches, 2 feet narrower than standard. It looks like it's 10 feet skinnier than a normal MLS field. I've never paced it off. I can't say, but it just psychologically feels that way, like it's cramped on the wings. And I think that when you go to Atlanta, it feels like the reverse is true, that there's even more space out there on the flanks and what the official field dimensions would suggest. That favors a Luca Langone, who is just, lightning quick, times his runs really well. And like I said, against Red Bulls 2 weeks ago, was really putting in great crossing passes. And so down that right flank, he could be a danger. On the other wing, the way the Revs play is they really like to get that left fullback forward. And Peyton Miller And, you know, sometimes his crossing is really good and sometimes it leaves something to be desired, but he gets it right enough of the time. And then, you know, Gana Go, who's a, you know, he's an international player. Like he just hasn't found the scoring touch. He'll unsettle a defense. And then I don't, you know, going through, you know, the list, and then Eli Feingold, he's both powerful and technical and will tuck inside, but can overlap. He'll also drop a shoulder and go through you. Like he's another young player. And they just need to get somebody on the end of those, you know, that service from all three or four of those players. And one of the guys who needs to get on the end of it and finish is Gana Go. Like I said, he's been hitting the goal. You know, he's been getting to the right spots. He's been taking on defenders, getting taken down in the box for a penalty. And, you know, it's like everything but the finish. And it has to come good sooner or later. But those are the guys I'd really watch.
I had to, when you mentioned Yankee Stadium, I had to go to the Peter Vermes quote. And so Peter Vermes measured it off when he was managing at Sporting, and he said it's 106 by 68.
68, yeah.
That's what Peter Vermes said at the time. So when you were mentioning the U-12 pitches, we joked.
Yeah, about. Yeah, 68 is about what I think. Like they say it's 70. It's really 68. It looks 65.
Yes. So at 68, we're rounding up because it's more than 67.5. We're rounding up to 70.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's about right.
I know you've got other stuff to do, and I can't thank you enough for doing this. Go ahead and hit the promo for me for folks and how they can listen to you 24/7, 365, not just tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, we're on 98.5, the Sports Hub, tomorrow at 2:30, the flagship station, number one sports station in New England. And when we're not, we're on HD2 for all home games. You can tune into the home radio option with a couple clicks of the button on Apple TV+.
As always, my friend, great to see you. It's been entirely too long. You now have the keys to the castle. You want to come in and vent in the hour of chaos in this 10 o'clock hour on Fridays, talk about your match, you can get out, you can. You got the keys. You're welcome anytime. Good to see you.
Thanks, John. Good to see you.
All right. That's Brad Feldman, play-by-play voice of the Revs. He's got like 19 different things he's doing today. We like squeezed him in. Squeezed. We jammed him in. And he was incredibly generous and gracious with his time to give us the background and the breakdown of everything going on with the Revs. So there's your Revs 101. Once again, Brad Feldman, the longtime play-by-play voice of the New England Revolution, as he prepped us all and gave us a bit of Revs 101, getting ready for New England and Atlanta United. Later on in the show, we'll catch you up with the thoughts of Jason Longshore, who is the color analyst for Atlanta United and part of the SDH family as well. You can hear Jason's Morning Espresso on the network. It's released in and around the time that SDH AM comes around. It is in audio form, video form, and in newsletter form, where you can get Jason's early thoughts on the day in about 15 to 20-minute chunks on a daily basis here at the SDH Network. But we'll hear from Jason, and we'll hear from pregame host, co-host Maddie Cruz. And Maddie also always gets to catch up with head coach Ronnie Dial during the home matches for the postgame show and the full-time report on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. What we also like to do sometimes here at SDHAM is kind of delve into the deeper sections of things that you might see on a daily basis or a weekly basis associated with favorite clubs. And since we have the space, sometimes we get the opportunity to kind of investigate a little bit. So what we did this particular week is catch up with Sarah Kate Knofsinger. She is a Senior Vice President and Chief Business Officer for Atlanta United. And there is a series that we would recommend that you watch if you're into programming that's attached to a club. And it is one of the quality elements that is pieced together throughout all of Major League Soccer, not just with Atlanta United. It is called Rooted in the Stripes, and it is a very ambitious episodic series that lets fans and fans of the sport in on what's going on behind the scenes. They kind of lift the curtain a little bit with what's going on with Atlanta United. So here's our conversation with Skate as we find out about Rooted and what it means as a part of the fabric of everything Atlanta United and what Atlanta United wants to do and wants to accomplish when it comes to being a part of the community. Here's our interview with Skate. I'm looking in the green room and I see the background. See, now that's a great studio background if ever there was one. It's time to catch up with Sarah Kate Knofsinger, Senior VP, Chief Business Officer of Atlanta United. We're going to talk stuff. That's the official term.
Stuff.
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 Skate, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk stuff with you.
Yes. And the biggest stuff that I wanted to discuss is rooted in the stripes. And it's for someone like me who likes to do longer form storytelling. And I like to have something where there's no track and there's no one talking about transitions or anything. And it's voice. 9.5 minutes go by, 15 minutes go by. Give me the deep dives and everything. What's it like to see Rooted take the form that it is, where it's now almost 30 minute episodes and it's really doing some deep dive material? What's it been like for you to see that?
Yeah. First of all, I totally agree with you. I love, seeing deeper form content, but then you have to find the fine line between if it's too long, it can lose people. If it's too short, sometimes you can't dive in deep enough. For me, I think you look at, forget just soccer clubs around the country. You look at pro sports around the country. I don't know how many, digital and production teams have the talent, to put together engaging episodes like this. And so I think it's kudos to the staff that we've got here that has the talent to do something like this. We look at, I think somebody told me once that for every hour of footage, you're actually lucky to get about 30 seconds of real content out of it.
Wow.
And so if you're looking at how long these episodes are, now if you get even more efficient, I've heard it's an hour of footage to 1 minute of true content. And so if you look at all of the, the length of those episodes and you start thinking about the footage that they've gone through, there's a lot of, you can't just sit there and take, 30 hours of footage and scrape through all of it. You got to have a storyboard and you got to have a plan. And so I do think for me to see this come to life, to see the stories, to see that we've got, people that are pretty vulnerable in front of the camera and the access that we have, I couldn't be more pleased with it.
I can just see the invoices coming across folks' desks. Okay, terabyte drive. What's this for? 4 terabyte drives. What is all of this about? Because of everything that you've got to store. How many people are we talking about here that is a part of the creative process, top, bottom, and sideways, to make something like this sing?
Top, bottom, and sideways. Oh, man, you can't even, fingers and toes don't include it all. When you look at the ones that are really cutting the footage, shooting the footage, and storyboarding it, you're looking at, there's probably a team of 5 or 6. And it could rotate. But I do think when I say you can't even count on your fingers and toes the number of people, the conversations that are had with, whether it's, listening to supporters, you're listening at, you're even reading some of the surveys, after you come to one of our matches and you read through the survey and you see some of the comments that come through, sometimes those do actually inspire us to, hey, let's uncover this and show really what's happening behind the scenes here. We're even, you want to make sure that even a casual fan, we sit in this every day, but you want to make sure that a casual sports fan that may not know every single thing about soccer, can understand and get engaged with one of these episodes and all of the episodes and want to follow it, as well as your avid fans. So there's even oft times where we're sharing potential stories with parents, with grandparents or with brothers and sisters and family, because sometimes those people are the best ones too, to be like, hey, what do you think? Does that sound interesting to you? But there are a number of people. We've got some, like I said, brilliant people behind the camera. You got a whole another team that is helping storyboard it out. One of the things you're seeing differently this year, or you will start seeing differently this year, is last year we only did, I think it was 4 or 5 episodes of Rooted in the Stripes, and they were fantastic. The way they were produced was, they were incredible. And they were beautiful. They were cinematic. And it was more done in chunks of time, where this year we've storyboarded out, some more specific stories that we want to follow throughout the year. And obviously you're going to have some squirrels that run through and you get distracted and you want to find those and tell those stories that you can't plan for and can't control. But then there are some stories that we do want, you'll see a red thread throughout the year. And we're trying to do actually 12 episodes this year versus 4 or 5 that we did last year.
I mean, and that's a tall order, because if you're doubling your episodic output, then once again, to your original point, you've got to figure out set length. But the beautiful thing about online and doing things through other channels is that it doesn't have to be 28 minutes and 30 seconds. It doesn't have to be 22:30. It can be 27:22. It can be 19:38, as long as it's a good story that's being told.
Right.
And then the length is somewhat irrelevant in all of this. And I think that that's part of that, the good part of the creative process these days from before when I started back in the days of black and white television and the DeMont network literally is okay. You've got to be out by 28:30 and you've got to tell a story in this kind of, the fact that you can let things breathe, I think is key, where folks can see those, threads, but at the same time they get attached to the quote unquote characters who are the real people here.
Right. No, characters who are the real people and getting them attached. There's a lot of pro athletes. There's a lot of coaches, people within front offices across sports that you don't like to have a camera in your face and following you around and showing those vulnerable moments. One of the things, again, that makes this place so special, one of the reasons I came back about a little over a year ago, is how transparent it is and how much it wants to do right by the fans and really have that buy-in. And so we've got players that know there's going to be cameras that are going to follow them around. They're going to be in the locker room. You look at the season, it may have been a frustrating start so far, but you got a new coach, you got a bunch of new players. You're building for the next, I like to say 20 years, but you're really building for the long term here. And having cameras in there to capture some of those vulnerable moments, to capture the frustration, but then also to capture the phenomenal moments that occur. I think that cast of characters and really peeling back the layers of the onion and showing some of the personality, whether it's front office folks, whether it's fans, and some of the most avid fans, or whether it's the players, I think will hopefully deepen a connection. And again, nobody's trying to hide anything here. We want to go out and win just like everybody else. And we want to win on the field and we want to win in the city.
How different is it for you here this second time around? How different is Atlanta United? How different is Major League Soccer? How different is soccer in the Southeast? How different is it for you in version 2.0 versus version 1.0?
Version 2.0. I think version 2.0, the story's still being written. And what's different now is when we started, I was the fifth person at Atlanta United. You were wearing 10, 12 different hats. And now instead of wearing 10 to 12 different hats, you might be wearing 4 or 5 different hats. So we're growing. It's not perfect. And anytime there's growth, there's going to be stumbling. That's part of life. If we're not messing up, it means we're not trying hard enough. And so where we are now is, again, we're trying to figure out stability long-term and greatness long-term. Where before we were really focused on just the short-term, for right or for wrong. That's what we were really focused on, just like that moment in time. And now we're trying to figure out how can we be, dominant long-term, and it's dominant on and off the field. And how can you create a legacy for generations to come is really what we're focused on now. But I'm enjoying it. There's so many new people, so many fresh minds, but then you also have the expertise of some people that have been in this business for so, so long that we can lean into. It's nice to come back and see familiar faces like yours when I'm, kind of wandering around the pitch. It's nice to see that. One thing that hasn't changed is the passion. I actually think, if anything, the passion's gotten, it's deeper. And as much as I hate seeing the frustration, you love to see the frustration, because the frustration means that people care. It's, you're seeing the conversations of standing versus sitting, and that's a great problem. People are excited. You're starting to see, you're starting to see that hunger and the desire to win, exude out of everyone's pores, no matter if you're in the first row, the last row, in the building, out of the building, or on the field, everybody wants it. So I think, the hunger is there. We're excited about that. I think you got a lot of new faces, like I mentioned before. MLS is continuing to evolve. You got more clubs than when I was here before. There's a lot more soccer going on in North America. So that's changed. There's more matches. So how do you keep it fresh? And then you look at Atlanta itself. Back in the day, no one thought Atlanta and soccer would work. Now soccer in Atlanta is the epicenter of soccer in North America.
When you look at, and you mentioned legacy, and full disclosure, I had the word legacy building in my brain when we were looking at, when we were talking about Rooted in the Stripes, because of all of the characters that are here and all the stories that are being told, and making sure that all of that is preserved going forward. When you look at the legacy of Atlanta United, and all of this, it almost is awe-inspiring at points. It's almost intimidating at points when you see the product that's being put out there. You're sitting there going, man, this is some heavy stuff that a lot of folks are dealing with. They're dealing with the on the field. They're dealing with the off the field. They're dealing with the growth of what's going on with Atlanta United. when you look at a final product, when you look at an episode, I guess first off, sub question, a little A, parenthesis. Do you want to see the process as it's going, or do you want to wait until you see the end episode and then rough cut it and then look at things? How are you when it comes to the vision of Rooted and you being a part of the viewing process?
That's a great question. So being a part of that kind of editorial and viewing process, I feel like if I was really sitting in there for every step along the way, it might be a producer and editor's worst nightmare. So, you know, I think it's great to align on a kind of high level storyboard and understand what the tone is and understand what some of the visuals are and understanding the feeling that you want to, you know, evoke in a consumer and someone that's watching it. So I usually align with them in the beginning and just have a high level, you know, kind of alignment, like I said, on some storylines. And then I like to actually wait until and see what they put together.
Okay.
And I think that's the trust that I have in this team and the talented group of people that you have, you know, and that trust has been earned over time. They are a truly talented team. And then we sit down and, you know, there's a core group of folks that come and edit, and it's, within all levels of the organization. So myself, Garth, you know, we take a look at it and we give feedback. And one of the things that makes it, I think it's probably shocking to a lot of people to know this, is we actually want it to be as vulnerable as possible, and we want it to be as raw and as real. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think Ronnie's been fantastic. If we've had cameras in every, the locker room at every moment that you possibly can, you know, in training at every, you know, moment that you can. You know, I think Derek Williams following him home, you know, spending some time with him as a seasoned veteran. You know, so again, I like to see it towards the very end. So the storyboard at the very beginning, and then I'll see it, you know, kind of once they've put together that, you know, anywhere from 25 to 29 minute episode, take a look at that. And then we all give feedback and say, hey, maybe we need subtitles here because you can't understand X, Y, and Z, or maybe that's light in that shot, or, you know, is there something that fits? But it's usually very minor edits that have to be made. That's how talented they are. And I think that's also a tribute to and kudos to the alignment that we have and the buy-in that we have, and we all know what we're trying to do. So yeah, it's pretty, they work their butts off, and I'm pointing to the room that they're in. They work their butts off over there. But they are super, super talented. And, you know, when we do the editing, it's, you know, the players know, the coaching staff knows, the front office knows that we're doing this to be transparent and to make sure that our fans are along this journey with us. And we're not ever going to put, you know, folks in a situation that's going to, you know, embarrass anyone. But you also want to make sure that we get the real raw stories out there. And we built that trust, and it's exciting. And I'm pumped this year for some of the fan stories that are going to come through. So I think we actually launched that in the last episode. And so working with the supporters to show their stories and to show how much work goes into all that they do.
Has there been a piece of content or a story or a snippet in any of these episodes this season that came as a surprise to you when you saw it? Since you have the trust in the individuals when it comes to the creative process and then the edit, when you go into the room and you see the rough cut, was there a piece, and you don't have to necessarily identify the player or the situation, but was there a piece that you're like, wow, I didn't know that, or wow, that was cool? Was there a wow factor or a cool factor that hit you this season so far?
I think the wow factor to me is when you, there's been a few, but the biggest wow factor is when you look at, you know, some of the biggest kind of sports documentaries, oftentimes it's shot with multiple cameras. Ours is shot with one. And so when we're capturing this footage, it's, you got to remember that we've got one person, and the fact we're getting these shots and they're in the right time, the right places, the right angles. To me, you know, there's a number of times that I've looked, I've been like, man, that was from one camera. We didn't have three working on the same storyline. It was one. You know, and so whether it's, yeah, you know, the scenes, even with, it's not easy to shoot someone in a car driving. You know, so some of those scenes with Derek or Saba, you know, to be able to capture those and actually keep people engaged in those little one-on-one conversations isn't easy. And I always think some of our match footage is truly spectacular.
And it really is. The whole cinematic element is really cool. And after you, I'm going to bring in our resident videographer, Nick Alifi, and we'll kind of compare notes with what he sees from what you guys are going through. So it's kind of dovetailed into a nice half hour here. Another couple of minutes with you. You know, where is this storyboard, by the way? Because you pointed to the room. Where is this storyboard? How big is it? And can you read all of the squiggles and lines and figure out what directions they're going?
You definitely can't read all the squiggles and lines and what directions they're going. You definitely can't read that. The storyboard, it's a wall, but it often gets erased and then rewritten. But we keep it under wraps. We keep it under wraps.
So literally there is the literal black cloth over the top of it. So no one can see it. And you have to duck under the black cloth to kind of see.
Yep. And then you got to turn on a flashlight. So it's kind of like a kid's tent. You got to turn on a flashlight to read the board and then we shut it again. No, I do think the board, it's not literally a board, but there's some brainstorming walls that we have where you write things up and you do start mapping them out. Like I said, sometimes they change, but you like to have a path. And then if you have to take a hard left, you take a hard left.
All right. One more question before we let you go, because you're one of the busiest people on this or any other universe. What else is going on community wise, outreach and things like that folks need to know about with Atlanta United, in addition to making sure that they watch Rooted 95,000 times and get immersed in every episode?
95,000 times would be wonderful. One thing I would say is, anytime you see anybody that's worked in this industry and Nick, I think you said that was his name's coming on next.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not easy to make long form content that people want to watch and stay engaged with. So, singing their praises would be awesome. And we also love the feedback. So keep the feedback coming here. If there's a storyline, shoot it over to us. We would love to know what do people want to see, because we don't have all those answers. What do we have going on? Obviously, this Saturday we play at 2:30, which exciting times to have an afternoon match on a beautiful Saturday. So we've got four matches coming up. I think there's four home matches in May, in addition to this one this weekend. Big stretch of road games. It's excited to watch the guys come together on the pitch, but I think off the pitch too. For us, festival season has begun in Atlanta, and for us to re-engage with our fans, like our ones that have been with us from the beginning, bringing all the newer ones into the fold. I think for us to be out on the streets, meeting everybody where they are, and really immersing ourselves in the city is the biggest priority that we have right now. And then the other priority is making sure we're listening to everyone. So excited to see what's going on in the streets, hearing from our fans. And again, the more information we get from people, the better. So we love to hear from people, and whether it's via email or on the streets or at festivals and checking out. I would also, slightly hint at start getting your flags out. Weather's getting better, so might start taking the streets again from a flag perspective and bringing some of those things around.
Okay. So we will certainly do that. Senior Vice President, Chief Business Officer, Sarah Kate Knofsinger, it's great to see you.
You too.
Great to have you come and crash the morning show. You have a golden ticket status now. So if there's anything on your mind you want to get into, or even on Friday in the hour of chaos when we talk about everything going on in Major League Soccer.
We would love that. At some point, I want a tour of all those scarves and the balls back. I think it's balls and hats and everything. I got to see all that stuff. That's an incredible collection you got.
Well, the boss is the one who, by the way, shower, the multi-tiered towel racks, the three level towel racks are God's gift to scarf holding. I have it here. I've got it in other shoulder there. And full disclosure, the boss was wondering with all of the hats and everything, and she had to reinforce with curtain rods because of the weight of the scarves down here. I've got like 425 hats from all the events I've covered and things. And so she's like, well, what are we going to do with all your hats? And so we're going to put a nail in the wall and put a hat on each one. I said, that might get a little messy. So she had our handyman come in and create a train track about a foot below the ceiling. And so I can pyramid all the hats and do whatever I need to. So I can rotate about 250 hats at any given time above me here in Office HD. So that's where we are. Welcome to the studio space, by the way.
Pretty awesome. Thank you for having me.
As always, it's great to catch up with Sarah Kate Knofsinger and find out what's going on in the administrative sense, about the administrative point of view of what's going on, where we get to see projects like Rooted in the Stripes and get her perspective on what's going on and how it's vital to the presentation and the education for everyone that's in and around and interested with the sport of soccer, and specifically with Atlanta United. Once again, you're listening to the best of SDHAM here on the Off the Woodwork podcast section, 92.9 The Game on the Odyssey app. John Nelson here with you and walking you through some of the best of the week at SDHAM. Once again, you can find it 9:05 Eastern Time live on the SDH Network, on YouTube, on X, and on Twitch. And you can find the audio. It is up on your favorite podcatchers. It is on our podcast base on Spreaker and the Spreaker app. But you can pretty much find the Daily Show in its full length and a lot of the highlighted segments in their individual chunks. You can find them at Spreaker and on your favorite podcatchers. So what we wanted to do, in the interest of equal time, since we got to catch up with Brad Feldman and find out what's going on with the Revs as they're getting ready for Atlanta United, let's catch up with Jason and Maddie and find out what they thought about the week at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground for Atlanta United getting ready with the Revs. Here's that conversation. You are there. Mm-hmm. Maddie is here. And Maddie is sporting her sweatshirt, getting ready for where are you getting ready for practice? Where are you?
Oh, I'm just chilling. I just came back from my passport appointment. So, you know.
Okay, so we have success with the passport appointment?
Success with the passport. Guys, Maddie Cruz is going to be international here shortly. Watch out. Okay.
Dangerous.
Exactly.
International incidents will be happening.
Whoa. Why would you say that? We'll have a great time. What do you mean?
Just saying.
Where are we going to have these international incidents? That's my next question.
Who knows?
Everywhere.
We had Brad Feldman on to start hour number two to kind of get the breakdown of the Revs. Jason, let me start with you. What has your week been like at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground as Atlanta United gets ready for said Revs?
Yeah, I think just getting a feel for how everything was processed from last week. You know, it's a weird game last week where you were better defensively than you've been for a lot of the season. You were really good outside of one major chance that you give up and you get punished for it, and it's frustrating. They weren't as good on the offensive side, and I think some of that's down to Maranchuk being only available for 20-30 minutes with the adductor injury. He's a full go, it sounds like, for this weekend. You know, like, they weren't quite as, I don't know, on the gas in the first half is maybe the best way to put it. They got the goal, and it was a brilliant ball from Tristan Mbemba, who was outstanding last week, and I think is becoming undroppable in the central midfield. But you get the goal, and it felt like that's one of those games that so often at the Benz we've seen them kick on and really put a team under pressure. And at times this season, maybe that conversation has been, well, they did that, but they didn't get the goal to show for it. In this game against Dallas, I don't feel like they did that enough. I didn't feel the urgency that was needed with the advantage. And that's something that just needs to continue to develop in this group, that feel. You know, you're what? They started in mid-January. You're not quite 3 months in. I was reminded this week of Frank DeBoer talking about when he took over, and 6 months was what he wanted to be able to put his stamp on the team. And what he wanted to do was different than what Tata Martino had done. And Tata had evolved too, and that's always an element that we forget when we talk about Atlanta United in 17 and 18. They ended up looking different at the end than they did at the beginning because Tata got to know the league and he adapted. Frank DeBoer needed to progress the team to a different level. If you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, even if a previous manager did it and it worked or it didn't work or whatever, you're going to get found out one way or another. You have to always evolve. So for Ronnie Dyla to come in and take what was the team at the end of last season, 6 months feels like a realistic ask, and especially when you're adding, you know, you're getting a full season of Maranchuk. You're getting Miguel Almiron back into the league. He's got to adapt. You got to adapt to him. Latte Lott into the league for the first time. You got to adapt to him. He's got to adapt to the league. You're getting some different pieces, and you're getting a full season of Pedro Amador as well. He's got to adapt to that. You've had some injuries to deal with, which you always do. That's always part of it. But it's a decent bit. And I think more than anything, you're adapting to a new mentality. And I don't think they're all the way there yet. I do think, and it's easy to sit here and look at the record and get, you know, frustrated or angry or whatever. Say, it's not good. No. It actually is pretty good. It's not as good as it could be. That's a very different conversation. Compare Atlanta United and New England Revolution in terms of what 2025 has been. New England, it hasn't been good, and they had more change in the offseason. It's a really hard job for Caleb Porter to get the team where he wants, and they're not showing that they're there. They're not showing that they're close to being there. The frustration in Atlanta is different. It's, man, we see it, and we see it for periods of time, and it's really close, and it's really good, but it's not that all the time. That's a different conversation. We can't just do the stomp our feet, throw our hands in the air, be angry about everything. This is a different frustration. Be specific. We want it to be consistent. You want to see the team continue to improve defensively. You want to see them not get punished for mistakes. You don't want to see them drop off when they have those moments of where they get questioned a little bit. And you want to see them with that increased urgency in the attack. And be aggressive and be nasty at times and flood the attacking half and go use that quality to put games away. And when you have a team on the ropes, knock them out. Like, that's such a different conversation. And that's where it needs to be. And I feel good about what we're seeing with Ronnie Dyla and this team. I want to see more of it for longer periods of time. And I want to see the payoff from it.
Maddie, what's the week been like for you?
I mean, yeah, Jason kind of hit the nail on the head with that one. But,
I got ranty.
No, it's all good. Hey, it's what it's here for, you know? I agree. I think, you know, in that last game against Dallas, you could have put it away. You had a couple of times to put it away, and you didn't. You let Dallas hang around. You let them hang out all the way up until the end, and, you know, you were the better team. And it just, you didn't have anything to show for it. And it's going into this weekend, you gotta start making those chances count. And I agree with Jason. Like, I think with every game we've seen, like, we've seen improvement in different ways. You know, it's weird. You can look at a game and it can be like, oh, well, I didn't see it there. This is there. Like, I think we've seen a progression in what we've seen.
I think the one that was an issue was NYC, and you get the win, but yeah, the performance wasn't as good as it had been in previous games. Yeah. But you won, which is still something you carry.
Yeah, and it's a weird one because, you know, I think from looking at this week in training and specifically, like, I really loved seeing the conversations that were happening, especially on Tuesday. We touched on it in training or in dispatch, but I just want to hit it again because we watched. There was a sequence in a scrimmage, and it was Alexi, and it was Ronnie Dyla. After it was done, like, Alexi was trying to point out, like, what he was thinking in this one play, where it should go, where he was thinking the pass would be, where the attacker was going to aim in the box, how that was going to work. Ronnie came over and chatted with him, and they talked, and they went through about, like, what they were thinking, what was happening there, and they talked it through. And that stuck with me. I asked Alexi and Ronnie, we asked them about it yesterday, and, you know, it's important to chat. It's important to talk. It's important to be open enough to say, hey, here's what I saw. What do you think? Well, what did you see? What do you think? What needs to happen here? And I think that dialogue is really important, especially, I think, between Alexi and Ronnie, because Alexi is someone you want as your playmaker, and that's important to have him be able to chat with Ronnie about what he's seeing on the field, what he's seeing, what Ronnie sees, and how he can help Alexi pick out those moments as well with Latte Lap, with Mickey, with Saba. But it's important for the players as well to say, hey, here's what we see on the field. How does this translate for you? Like, well, how do we make these pieces work? And, you know, it's like Ronnie said, it's a painting. You're still making this painting. It's, you know, it could be like Mona Lisa. Like, you're still working on it. And it's getting there, you know, but it's like, hey, if this one thing doesn't work and this stroke maybe looks weird, you know, let's change it. Let's fix it. Let's make it look nice. And it's slowly coming together. And I think that's the thing that needs to hit home. It's not going to click immediately. Some teams do. Some teams don't. I feel like it's very rare you see teams that just click immediately. It takes time.
Usually the ones that do don't actually get better.
Yeah. And I think you're seeing the growth. You're seeing the growth between the players. You're seeing the growth and the team as a whole. And, you know, you're seeing it all grow, not only on the field, but also off of it.
Maddie, do me a quick favor. Log out, log out. Lip flapping a little bit. So go ahead and log out, log out.
Will do.
All right. All right. So.
So Forsyth County reception is a mess.
You ain't kidding, brother. So with your study of the Revs, what have you seen this week with getting ready for Carlos Heel and the madness that could come with him?
Carlos Heel's scary. I mean, that's the thing about this New England Revolution team is Carlos Heel can fix things. They're still kind of figuring out what they're going to be. I think they had, if I remember right, like 15 signings coming into this season, which is crazy. I mean, it's a brand new team. That's an expansion team almost. So you're not going to have a whole lot of coherence in the way that you want to be with all of those changes. You just can't. But you look at New England and you look at what I think there's pressure on Caleb Porter, and it's not so much about this season. It's about what happened in the past, and you needed to hit the ground running quickly and you haven't, and it's understandable why you haven't, but you know, 1-4-1, you've only scored 3 goals, and that's the number one thing, but you've only conceded 7. Now that's the other element that is something to understand here is that you're in a decent spot on that side of it defensively. That part has come together a little bit with a lot of changes and with a lot of new faces, but you're all right defensively. You just haven't gotten anything going forward yet. I mean, Maxi Urruti started last week. I feel like he's played for every team but Atlanta in MLS. Heel can kill you. Langone and Ganago haven't quite found it yet. But your one win this season for New England was a really good one. It's over the Red Bulls. That's not easy to pull off. That doesn't happen all that often. And you got that in the bag. So I think for Atlanta, you got to look at a back line that has been pretty good, but a back line that has a lot of new faces. You got to put them under pressure. You got to stress test them. And in the attack, you just have to make sure you know where Carlos Heel is at all times. You know, you look at the way he's been used this season. And think back to previous times under Bruce Arena where Heel would play as a winger, but not really be a winger. He would tuck inside. I know that's crazy. When you start in a position on the map, like you have to stay in that position at all times. You can't move anywhere and you can't show any other qualities. Like if you're a winger, you're a winger. You have to stay on that side. If you're a 10, you're a 10. You can't move anywhere. If you're an 8, a 6, whatever, you can't move. Just saying. Carlos Heel has been more central this year to start. And I think that makes it a little bit easier to deal with. I thought he was always such a challenge in the past when he would be in that right wing position, for example, and he would fill the position a lot of times, but then kill you by coming inside. So you get into this push-pull defensively of, like, okay, if he's the right winger, then you're thinking your left back's got to deal with him defensively. But when he comes into the middle, then either the left back's got to come into the middle too. And if New England's right back, which Brandon Bye for so many years would get forward and then take that space, you're in trouble. So then your left back has to stay home. So then you got to pass Carlos Heel off to one of your central midfielders, or a center back's got to step out, and then everything can get pulled apart. If he's your 10 for New England and he's staying central, it's a little easier to figure out who's got him. You still got to get him, which isn't easy, but you at least know who is going to do that. Heel's the one. I mean, I think as New England puts it together, they're going to need him to put the Superman cape on and more often than not in the first half of the season. And teams have been able to limit that so far. He continues to get older and we know how that goes. That's the concern for me. Don't give up set pieces. Don't let Carlos Heel get away from you. If you can bottle him up, I think you can handle everything else. And then you've just got to stress that defense. And I go back to what I said against Dallas. If you get that first goal, which you need to get at home, you need to then go get the second and the third. You need to go put the game away. be aggressive. That needs to be the accelerator, not the decelerator, the first goal. And that's what I'd want to see on Saturday afternoon.
Maddie, what kind of match are you looking for in this one?
Am I muted or am I good?
You're good.
And you're not weirdly robotic.
Okay, I think I know what it was. I think my Bluetooth was connected to my car and it was being weird. So I think we're good now. Amazing.
I still blame Force Account.
It's fair. Fair enough. I get it. I mean, listen, I think, yeah, I know you want to see Atlanta, I think, come out on the front foot, but then you want them to stay on the front foot. I think when you get that goal, when you do get that early goal, like, don't let it bring you down. Don't say, oh, don't be comfortable. And I don't think that was the case. I don't think it was Atlanta being comfortable. It was just you didn't put the game away. You had chances and you just let DC stay in it. When you were dominating, when you were holding them down, when you were out there not allowing them to create a lot of good chances, you didn't let them do anything until really the second half. And that's something you got to do. You got to just hold on. And I want to see them not only step on the gas, but continue to be on the gas for the entire game, because we know they can. We've seen it in multiple games. I mean, I go back to the NYC one. Yes, it wasn't the best performance, but you went down 3-1 and you came back to win it 4-3. Like, I think about that, because that shows the fight that this team has.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously you want us to be on top the entire time. You want it to be 3-1 all the way through and we win, get the win that way. But for me, the games where you do get the grit and you drive and you are able to come back after being down 3-1 and are able to win it at home in such a short amount of time, that shows the personality and the identity of this team. That shows what this team is made of. That shows the fight that this team has.
And it does. And I think that's why I was so disappointed with Dallas.
Because
you saw that fight and that you saw the desperation. I mean, you're losing, so it's desperate. It's not urgent. It's two different things. But they should be related. And you didn't see the urgency with the lead in the same way you saw it coming from behind against NYC. You know it's there.
Yeah.
And now you need to see it more consistently on a regular basis. That's the next step.
And it did take a while for Maddie's phone to no longer overheat. So it was it did finally lessen its heat factor. So it is now back to being a functioning phone for Maddie, just to let you know. Once again, it is always an hour before kick. It is time for the for all of the pregame festivities involving Atlanta United, 92.9 The Game of the Odyssey app. Abe Gordon, Maddie Cruz, it is with Mike Connie and Jason Longshore. They get to catch up with either Chris Henderson or Garth Lagerwey on a weekly basis and let you know what's going on. Mike and Jason have your play-by-play on 92.9 The Game of the Odyssey app. And then post-match during home games, it is yours truly, John Nelson, with Abe. And then it is on road matches. It is Maddie. It is Nick. It is Jared to be paired with Abe to let you know what's going on for the full-time report on a weekly basis. But every single week, please come back here and find out what's going on at SDHAM. And you can find out the best and the greatest hits and find out what's going on with us at soccer down here. And hopefully, once again, be a part of the conversation and join us on Monday through Friday starting at 9:05 Eastern time on YouTube, on X, and on Twitter. So for everybody here at SDH and SDHAM, I'm John Nelson. Thanks for dropping by, as you always do, here at 92.9 The Game and the Off the Woodwork podcast section and the Odyssey app. Enjoy the matches, enjoy the games, enjoy everything about the sport of soccer. Mucha plata, y'all. Play it safe. We'll catch up with you next week.